We're back with more of Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke.
When Milwaukee writer Mel Miskimmon's mother died, somewhat unexpectedly a few years ago, it shook the foundation of her family. At 57, Miskimmon had not had to deal closely with the death of a loved one before, and it left her and her father rudderless.
Enter Seamus, Miskimmon's cheerful Labrador retriever. Over the next year, Seamus played a key role in bringing father and daughter together and getting them each past their grief. Miskimmon chronicles that story in her new memoir, Sit, Stay, Heal, and she and Seamus are with us in the studio to share more. Welcome back. It is nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too, although I have a dog panting on my leg right now.
Well, and we'll get to Seamus here in just a minute.
Yeah, he can't wait.
How would you describe your relationship with your dad before or maybe at the time your mom passed away?
Well, you know, my dad is a retired Milwaukee cop, and dad wasn't the go-to guy you would talk to about your relationships with so-and-so. You know, that would have been mom. Or she was the one you'd call up to just be like, I got a vent. You know, dad would pick up the phone. Hello. I'm like, hey, Dad, how are you? Here's your mother. You know, that's basically what he would do. So after this happened, well, for one thing, if I may, we kind of thought my dad would be the first one to go of the pair because, I mean, come on. He was a cop for 40 years. He hunts. He fishes. You know, he deals with all kinds of firearms. He does crazy things.
Certainly had a more risky...
Yeah, than my mom. So, but it did not go that way. And when my mom passed away, it was sort of like this punch to our guts, you know, and my dad was totally beside himself. And, okay, here's the other weird thing. At 57 years old, I really never dealt with death. I mean, yeah, grandma died, but I was off in college. Or I was three, you know, so, and uncles, aunts, but no, I never dealt with, like, the icky parts of it until my mom died.
No one was really ready for this point.
No, I mean, we didn't even have plot, casket, what? You know, now what do we do? So my dad was just beside himself, and I was too. And then I thought, well, maybe he needs a project. So as I was at my computer, my dog is usually under my desk, which he is right now. Yeah, which he is right now. And I just thought, I got this thought in my head. I'm like, well, maybe my dad could help me with this stupid idiot dog I have.
And there's a reason for this. I mean, your dad was a dog person.
Yeah, I mean, my dad... He was a Springer Spaniel man, which, you know, I have a Labrador, which is like, ugh, to him. But, yeah, I mean, he's like a master hunter, excellent guy. I mean, he did field trials, and he was a judge, and he did all this. I mean, he had dogs that all he had to do was look at, and they would know exactly what he meant. You know, raise an eyebrow. Oh, I sit, you know.
He's a dog perfectionist.
Yes, as he is in everything, really, kind of. But since then, I have to say, he's got a soft, chewy center now.
Do you think you're more open to seeing that soft, chewy center now, given that the two of you have weathered these years?
Yeah, or? You know, we've bonded, and it's sort of... It's nicer. And I'm not saying it wasn't nice before. It's just nicer, different, kind of, you know.
Well, and so you talk about Seamus as the potential project. Let's talk about what you were hoping to do with Seamus.
Oh, well, see, that was the problem. I had no idea what I wanted to do with him. So my father and I, we'd go out every Wednesday into this field, and my dad would try to get the dog to do what Labradors are supposed to do, which in my mind is just sit on the sofa, get the paper.
Pant heavily,
you know, provide heat in the winter. And then my dad would just be so frustrated with me. You should have started this 7 years ago. And I'm like, so
in fairness, you did something at the sports show with him.
Oh, my God. I brought shame upon the entire family. This is when he was about two. And I saw this ad in the paper, enter your retriever, fastest retriever contest, first prize, $500. I'm like, oh, no brainer. You know, I had a retriever. He was fast. I mean, they should just give us the prize money. All he had to do was run 40 yards in a straight line, pick up a training dummy, it looks like a boat bumper, and bring it back to me. How hard could this be? You know, so we kind of practiced on the sidewalk for like twice because then I got bored. I'm like, this is boring. So we get to the sports show, and it was just horrible. I got kicked out. Yeah, we got kicked out.
So with that in Seamus's background, you set about going out just about every week to do stuff.
Retrievering stuff with my dad. And what happened was, I don't know if I should spoil it.
No.
You have to buy the book and find out.
Let's just say Seamus improves over the course of the year that you're working with him.
Oh, definitely. And consequently, I improve because, you know, it's hard. You have a pet and you kind of think of it as, yes, it's a cat or it's a dog or a ferret or a parrot or whatever. But you kind of anthropomorphize it to the point of it's a person-dog hybrid. You know,
and so, also maybe an extension of yourself.
Yeah. And I was not a person who likes to impose my will on things. I just go, well, you know, whatever. So for me to take charge and become an alpha of the pack, oh, that was the hardest thing ever. Because I had to, like, it was black or white. You do, when I say this, you must do that. And then I would waver, you know, I'd be like, oh, well, maybe he's having a bad day. You know, that's close enough, you know, that kind of thing. But not in my dad's world. It was like, you know, no. So
there's not a lot of room for nuance.
No. But my father was operating in this field trial brain. And I was kind of operating in this, oh, God, I'm just doing this to get, you know, to get us out of our grief. And, yeah.
Well, and so talk about how that worked, because, I mean, it'd be one thing if you were just doing this to redeem Seamus after, you know, his experience as a two-year-old quasi-puppy. But where does grief fit in all of this?
Well, it sort of brought us out, literally outside, and gave us something else to talk about instead of, you know, going over and over like, how did this happen? Why didn't I see this coming? How sick was she? You know, my father blamed himself. I mean, it was the classic, I should have, I could have, why didn't I? You know, that self-blame.
Right.
And for me, I, like I said before, I had never experienced this pain. I mean, it was like a literal heartache. And seeing my father so sad just weighed on me. I mean, my parents were like a pair of mallards. You know, they were mated for life, you know. And
that was 60 plus years.
Yeah. And for to see him without her, I just, it was weird. And it just, it wore so heavily on me that I eventually did go to therapy.
Right. You write about this. I mean, you write about several epiphanies along the way. One gets its own chapter called The Epiphany. But earlier in the book, there's this significant moment that you related about kind of having to come to terms with your dad's grieving process.
Yeah, I did. And I went to therapy and I was just so, I told the therapist, I said, I don't ever see a day when I'm going to be laughing, you know, again. It was all just like, get up, put your foot in front of the other foot, you know, kind of a thing. Throw the dummy, blow the whistle, blah, blah, blah. So she says to me, she goes, well, it's a testament to his love for her that he's so sad. I mean, what would it be like if he was all la-di-da? And I thought, oh, yeah, that would be kind of bad. So that was a big epiphany for me because I thought, this is the pain. You know, you love and then you have to feel this pain, but it's all such a process that you have to go through and it's so hard. I did not like it. But,
do you think your dad was thinking the same thing about you?
Oh, man, I don't know. I don't know. I do think that we've kind of got this. You know, it's a bond. It's like we went through this together, and now we've I don't know. I don't know. I don't have words for it. It's just in the way he looks at me, or he will confide in me, and now he calls me on the phone. And I'll look at the phone, you know, and we've talked for 14 minutes and 25 seconds. What? You know. And I love him to death, right? I mean, I did, but now I'm just, oh, he's
now you can say it out loud.
Yeah. Now I can say it out loud, even to him.
I should ask him this question, but I'll ask you instead.
Great.
What was his take on your writing this book?
Oh, I got to tell you, I was so scared about
that. Does he know
that.
It's out?
Oh, yeah. He read the first. Yeah. Oh, Mitchell. I told him I was writing it, and he didn't say anything. And I showed him the first rough draft manuscript, and I thought, oh, God, what is he going to think? You know, is this too – am I exposing too much of him, you know, out there? Is it too hard? Would it be too hard for him to relive all this again? But I thought, well, if I'm taking a risk and putting myself out there in this whole experience, what can you do? So I steeled myself, and I got the phone call. And he's like, Mel? I'm like, oh, God. I go, yeah. I read the book. I'm like, oh, and you're still talking to me? You know, and he's like, well, the first part was hard, you know, because the first part's all about dealing with my mom's death. And then he really liked it. So, you know, and I told him, I said, hey, you think it was hard for you to read it? It was hard for me to write the damn thing. Oops, sorry. Sorry.
You were telling a story just a minute ago. You did, your version of your dad's voice. there's an audio book out, and I'm thinking it must be weird to have somebody else, not you, not your dad, a third party doing your dad's voice.
Totally. I mean, I only heard a snippet because I didn't want to pay the $25 to download it.
You do not get your own copy of the audiobook?
No, I did not get my own copy of the audiobook. Ugh, harumph. I thought, all right, you know, because I lobbied really heavily for me to read the book because I thought, come on, this would be great. But they were like, no, we have actors and actresses and we have this whole thing. And I'm like, well, okay, let it go. And I listened to this woman.
Meryl Streep, right?
Yeah, exactly. Meryl Streep. Read the book. And I, you know, it was weird because it was sort of like I was hearing the words that I wrote, but they sounded really good. I thought, I'm sitting there listening. I'm like, oh, dang, this is a good book. I'd buy this book. You know, and then when she got to my mom's voice, I thought, oh, yeah, that's mom.
Well, regardless of any... Oh, hello there, Seamus. Hi.
Yeah. Oh, my God. He's going to adjust the levels.
All of a sudden, there was a nose on my hand. I was just going to say thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. No, this has been great.
Writer and occasional Lake Effect essayist Mel Miskimmin's new book is called Sit, Stay, Heal, How an Underachieving Labrador Won Our Hearts and Brought Us Together. Mel will talk about the book tomorrow evening at Boswell Book Company, and she promises to bring Seamus along as well.